Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
This is issue 8.5, and if you're wondering, wow, Leander certainly sounds different. I wonder if he got a voice-ectomy today or something like that. That is not a thing, and you should not be wondering that. And I am Patrick, because Leander is still out, mysteriously. Like we said in the main episode, if you've seen him, please tell us where he is. We're worried. Leander, come back. We didn't mean what we said. We really like rat queens. You don't have to run away so far.
I'm not big on rat queens.
This is why he ran away from us, Nat.
I'm sorry.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Nat, don't mean to, burst your bubble on it. I'm still reviewing it today, so.
Oh my god. Why do these things happen to me?
Anyway. You push away everyone we love. Anyway, with that.
So, Leander, wherever you are, definitely not tied up at my apartment so that I can get to hosting this. I still got a review on Rat Queens for you.
Alright, well, with that said, special guest host Chris, why don't you take it away with our first review of our reviews episode?
Alright, number 11 of Killer Be Killed. Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips, and Elizabeth Brett Weiser. I'm terrible with name pronunciations. Issue 11 of Killer Be Killed, put out by Image, is the beginning of a new story arc. The last two trades that they had ended on fantastic cliffhangers. They did that with the first trade, and then they did that with the second trade. And this picks up from that, and it actually pulls it into an entirely new direction of where he's going with the story. If you haven't been reading Killer Be Killed, the first issue was very depressing when it started. That's the only way to put it.
Image Comics are depressing? What?
Yeah, right? It's, the first issue, you have this guy who's dealing with depression, and he tries to kill himself and survives. And, yeah, like, he jumps off of a six-story building, and all he breaks is his arm. But then, at the end of the issue, there's this demon, like, that approaches him very... Death Note-esque, like, in his room, it pops through the mirror, and he's like, I saved you, and I now own your life, and it's going to be, you're leasing it from me. You have to go kill bad people for me. And at first he doesn't believe the demon, and then he makes a conscious decision to do what the demon says and take up this, like, pseudo-vigilante role. And as soon as he makes that decision, he starts recovering from this, like, sickness that he had fallen into at post-jumping off of a building.
The sickness that you have from post-jumping off of a building.
Classic post-building jump sickness.
It's a legitimate medical condition called, why did you do that?
Yeah.
But yeah, the end of the first story arc, and this is spoilerific, you find out that he was on a medication, an antipsychotic medication.
What?
Yeah, and so this, like, the entire first story arc ends with you questioning on whether or not it's actually real.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then the end of the second story arc, he confronts the fact that it may not be real.
But you still don't know as an audience
member? Oh, you know, like, he winds up going to an art gallery with his pseudo-girlfriend at the time, and she has stolen a bunch of artwork that his father had done, and put it up in this art gallery as this, hey, look at these old pieces, trying to get fame for herself. And he's there and he sees it, and he had never seen these images before, and the demon is in these images that his father drew, like, 30 years ago.
Weird.
And so you're not sure if he's going to keep doing this vigilante work or not. And then this picks up on an entirely new, like, they could have ended it there.
Right.
And this grippingly takes you in a new direction.
Huh.
Where he's now having to deal with the aftermath of, oh, I was off of my psychosis medication and murdering people, and now there's consequences.
What?
Yeah. And so that's where the new story arc is starting with issue 11. Hmm. So.
Interesting.
Yeah, they do a really good job of, like, building to cliffhangers and keeping a story going at a point where it could easily have ended.
Image is really good about that. Like, yeah. They're, like, end of the issue, like, cliffhangers are so spot on.
I give it, like, knowing Image and how they produce, I give it way more to the writers than I do to Image.
Which is so weird that, yeah, like, there's things that certainly, they've become Image tropes, and trope not in a negative way. It's just something associated with Image.
It works, and it's good.
It's just really weird that it's something that's become, because they're independently produced comic books, so it's just a really weird thing that happens so frequently.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say it's Image's thing, but their thing, I should say, is to get really good writers who have kind of a similar style that kind of fits into their style as a whole.
Yeah.
So... yeah, so they're not, like, you can tell it's, like, very natural for all these writers and artists to be doing what they are doing, and the fact that it's just under the Image title is, like, coincidental more than anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But saying that, if you're not reading some Image books, you really should, you owe it to yourself to try something out, because there's something for you.
Oh my gosh, any comic fan, like, at all, should be reading Image. If...
yeah,
I mean,
there's at least one thing out there for you in Image books.
Oh yeah, so definitely for everything, and for some people, multiple Image things.
Yeah.
So and that is the thing. Kill or Be Killed, though, is definitely a very dark storyline. Mm-hmm. It's gory. It's
Sean
very
Phillips has a really unique art style, right?
Yeah, and this is the one piece where I've seen people doing cosplays of the main character, and I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah!
Because he is like a thug gangster vigilante, and if you look at the cover and see him, he's in jeans, a hoodie, and a red, like, balaclava, and he wields a shotgun.
Yeah, cosplay for that, you might get mistaken for somebody who isn't cosplaying.
Yeah.
So.
And that's why, like, I was really surprised with stuff with, like, SDCC and down here with Denver Comic Con, how they could have gotten away with some of that.
Yeah.
Especially with the, like, the cosplay prop rules that Denver had this year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. So.
Alright. Cool. Well, I guess I'll go next. I'm gonna do two, like, semi-quick ones. Firstly, I got All New Wolverine and Wolverine. This is Marvel's Generations.
The best.
The best. This is Tom Taylor and Ramon Rosanz on art. I think I mispronounced the last name. Sorry, Ramon. Come in here and talk to me about it. So, while it says the best on the cover, I give this story a resounding meh. Because, I mean, it's a Wolverine story, definitely. The first, like, you know, 15 or 20 pages are basically, like, fight sequences in various areas against the Hand, and then they're in a plane fighting Sabretooth. And then it's, like, not until the last 4 pages do we actually get, like, some real depth into both the Wolverines as characters, and we get, like, this interesting sort of mention of, like, what family and connections actually mean to both of these hardened assassins. So, yeah. That's basically my review of the best, is it's the mediocre book.
I have a question for you, because that's not Old Man Logan, right? Like, that's actually Wolverine.
Yeah, so it's, I guess Laura goes back in time somehow. It's not really explained, and she meets up with, it kind of looks like the 80s, maybe, Logan.
Okay.
Like, she mentions cell phones at one point, and he's like, what's a cell phone? But it's also not too back in the day, where it's, like, a noticeable, like, difference in, like, technology and stuff like that. So, yeah, I'd guess probably, like, 80s, maybe late 70s, something like that. So, yeah. Meh. All right, and next up we got DC's The New Superman, which is written by Jean Luen Yang and artist or pencils by Billy Tan. This book, each issue is coming into its own more and more so. In this one, we really have, like, the formation of the Justice League of China. So we got, you know, new Superman, obviously. We got Batman, Baixi Wang. We got the Chinese Wonder Woman, who is has an interesting mythological origin story, but Chinese, not Greek. And we got the Flash, too.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is, I forget her name right now, but she was in, like, a couple of the Flash, like, the American Flash issues. And so now she's in China with the Justice League over there. And also, we get an interesting cameo here towards the end of another American team that has some sort of fame these days, some sort of squad of types, if you will, who it looks like we're going to be getting a Justice League versus this squad kind of event coming up.
Cool.
Of some type. So I'm really interested to see where that goes. Yeah. So that's all I gotta say about those.
That's all I gotta say about that.
And that's all I gotta say about that.
Alright, well, my first review is for Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, number 0. This is one of Dynamite's introductory issues. So they're doing it as 25 cents. That's kind of a primer issue to get people reading the book. It's, as such, I will review this with a softer hand than I might normally because it's 25 cents. Yeah, this is one of those things where it should be an easy pickup when you look at the artwork.
For the price of a gumball, you can have a comic book.
For the price of a phone call, no, you can't. Pay phones. Anyway.
Payphones are like $10 now.
Payphones? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, every now and then you see one, and you're like, wow, there's a urinal, an outside urinal. Oh, no, wait, that's a payphone.
That's weird.
No, it's still an outside
urinal. Oh, my God. I digress. So Sheena is written by Marguerite Bennett and Christina Trujillo, with art by Moritat. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've always said it that way. Moritat, if I'm not, come on the show. Let us know. Do some drawings. but it's actually a beautiful book, first and foremost. Birds of Paradise from Magic the Gathering appear on the first page and let you know that there's going to be a lot of mana in this jungle. it's a really interesting take. I've heard of the character. Sheena's like a kind of a female Tarzan. So it's a jungle protector, and they introduce modern technology. It's specifically a drone. And she calls it it's the flying turtle of metal. You know, that's going around. Yeah, so she's trying to chase this down and ends up in a sacred ground, like a sacred temple in the jungle. And she goes in there and starts running into other artifacts. So this is clearly set in modern times, and there's flashes to maybe her past. I actually really dug this, especially as a 25 cent, you know, pickup and enjoy the artwork, because it's gorgeous. Moritat has a very, like, it's a mix of Miyazaki and Mobius, so it's a Euro style mixed with a little bit of manga and anime flair to it with rounded features. But there's kind of like at the end of the issue, college kid might have been the one flying this drone. So
yeah,
so juxtaposing what is normal life now versus this jungle character. So I'm interested. I actually will pick up issue 1 after reading this. It's a quick read. It's a breeze. You know, it's not a full 22 page issue. It's, you know, just a primer. But once again, the art is just really, really good, and there's a lot of detail in the background elements. And, you know, cool ruins and things. Yeah, I think it's a quick, easy read. I would recommend this to just about anybody. What I'm really excited for is seeing what an all-female writing team does to a character that on paper could be very much a cheesecake character.
Yeah.
And so, like, that intrigues me. Like, where are they going to go with the story? Because
the cover is, like, just looking at it, it's the very, like, classic, like, butt and boobs
superheroine
cover.
And then you see that it's written by two women, and you're going, okay, well, I'm intrigued. Like, what is the perspective on this story?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what is making me interested, besides the art, which I actually do like. So I would say pick it up 25 cents. It's not going to hurt you to go and read that one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Nice. All right, what else you got for us, Chris?
Curse Words, issue 7. Charles Sewell. I'm probably mispronouncing that. And Ryan Brown. I'm really enjoying this series. That being said, this issue and the previous one have been a lot slower than I feel like the first 5 issues were. It seems like they're setting up a lot more story arc and doing a little more world building and trying to build something a little more serious. The plot line behind Curse Words is Wizord. That's his name. He's the Wizord. was an evil wizard that got dropped into New York City, and his master had tasked him with destroying the earth, and he was concocting this spell that took 10 days and everything was going to get obliterated at the end of that 10 days. And he fell in love with humanity and the world and, like, the concept of free will. And so at the end of the 10 days, just tipped the pot over and took up it, kind of like Harry Dresden, if Harry Dresden was a rock star. That's so cool. He's very open that he's a wizard. He charges people to do magic for him. Like, there's this reoccurring, like, sort of background character named Johnny Platinum. And Johnny Platinum was a rapper that paid him to turn him literally into platinum. So there's this just background character that's this musician made entirely out of platinum.
That's awesome.
But, I mean, going into it, like, the artwork that they do in this is very colorly vivid. And just how Wizord deals with normal people. He has this thing where the length of his beard determines how much magic power he has at that point in time. So he'll either be fully charged with, like, a chest-length beard, or he'll have, like, stubble on the next page. But
so, like, does it shorten as he uses magic then?
Yes. So that's hilarious. That was actually part of the first story arc where the character in the whole world, H-O-L-E, where he Wizord comes from, severed his link to magic, and they all seem to be tied to certain stones. So Wizord was sapphires, and he cut his tie to magic. So Wizord has to power up with remnants of magical areas in our world.
Okay.
And so his beard grows and declines in length as that happens. And this issue's building another character. Her name is Ruby Stitch. And it addresses Wizord's pseudo-familiar. Her name is Margaret. She started as a koala, and then she was a hawk, and now she's a platypus.
Okay.
Yeah. And Ruby Stitch was another wizard who got her power severed, and she's trying to deal with, like, it's building up her character. But this is, like, the artwork is still fantastic. I love the colors behind this and, like, the concepts of where the magic's coming from, and it's building it up. It just feels a lot slower than the first trade paperback was, which I've been pulling this issue by issue since it came out.
What issue number is this?
This is 7. So this is going to be the second one in the second issue in the second story arc.
Okay.
So it might be something that's maybe better for someone who hasn't gotten into it yet to wait and pull as a trade paperback instead of getting it issue by issue. But otherwise, like, the overall story arc and the coloring, I just can't get over, like, the artwork that they deal with this. Like, there's a... And the things Wizord does are very rock star-ish. There's this Interpol agent that's trying to track him down, and instead of killing him, he turns him into a chair.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he's, like, there's this French Interpol agent that's now an office chair. And, yeah. It's... That's what he does.
Nice.
So, yeah. And he's got his...
Oh, that's creepy with the face.
So he's actually still alive as the office chair.
That's
because he had like biometric sensors in him because they were going to fire rockets at Wizard if if the agent died and Wizard just killed him off, but instead he turned him into a chair and they're like, well, we're not getting any audio anymore, but his life signs are still all there.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of dark, actually.
Yeah, it is actually,
yeah, it's really comically dark. That's right. What it is. It's very comically dark.
Yeah.
So
I like the core concept of this title. Sounds really, really
yeah.
Like a
but,
fun
I mean, he does like fun wizard things. Like the first page, this Interpol guy's got a gun to Wizard's head, and Wizard's reaction to it is to turn the man's hand into a stapler, and then snap it off and put it on his desk.
Oh,
yeah,
his hand?
His stapler, and he's like, he's like, hey, I've always wanted one of these. So, and then all I can imagine is like this French, like that's my stapler. That's my stapler. So yeah, curse words. I mean, kind of following off of Patrick, it's kind of a
meh
compared to the previous issues I've seen with it, but
yeah.
Still excited to see where it's going.
Nice. Well, I guess I'll go to the next. Something that's definitely never meh. The Black Panther and the Crew, number 5. This is written by Ta-Nehisi Coates and art by Butch Gweiss. Thank you very much. Butch, you can come in and talk to me about that if you would like. With Mark Charter and Stephen Thomas on pencils, so...
Well, that's probably inks, right?
No, actually, inkers, we got Scott Hanna and Charter and Thomas, so...
Oh, so we got three inkers, or pencilers on
there. Yeah, we got three pencilers and three inkers, actually, so a lot of talent going into this book. And you can tell the art style in this, it's definitely very dynamic in an interesting way. So this, we finally have the full team promised to us from the get-go. We got Manifold joining the crew here, and he just wrecks shit against the AmeriCops, really. So action-wise, definitely still up there. We also get, like, these amazing bits from so far, like thematically, this whole thing has been a lot about home and where home is and like family and how you like can't really choose your family, but your family makes you who you are, and this whole really interesting thematic statement. And we have Manifold sort of monologuing here, like, I've traveled around the multiverse and I can do anything, and I'm still always drawn back towards Harlem.
That's cool.
as my home, you know, I'll do anything for this place. So just a really interesting, like, sort of monologue as he's fighting these cops. And then we have the other four members of the team come in, and we have a full page spread here of Luke Cage, Storm, Black Panther, and Misty Knight all coming in these different poses that are all very indicative of, like, them as people. So we got Misty Knight as this sort of, like, very graceful, very ballerina-esque pose. We have T'Challa coming in with this, like, two arms outstretched, almost like a Jesus, like, sort of crucifix thing.
The savior.
Yeah, the savior slash, like, king kind of thing. And Luke Cage, this very powerful, very dynamic stance, and Storm coming in as almost this, like, Madonna type.
She's super relaxed in that pose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Super relaxed, and very graceful, and very motherly. I wish she could just hold me in her arms. And so very interesting, like, full-page spread there of just the team coming together. And then basically for the last, like, five pages of this, longer than that, actually, it's just, like, all of them sitting in the coffee shop kind of talking about stuff that's happening. Basically that, like, these AmeriCops, which are, like, robotic things, kind of controlled by Hydra. They're forcing the riot to happen so that they have something to protect the city from. Basically, like, making this thing to justify their own existence happen. Like, just keep on pushing the envelope and pushing the tension until it will break, and then they can be there to be like, yeah, see, this is why we're here in the first place, is to protect you from this happening, which is ultimately caused by us. I don't know, very interesting. Like I said, the thematic arcs running through this are just so spot on. This is, as Leander and I have said in the past, this is the comic that Ta-Nehisi Coates has been wanting to write since he started the Black Panther run. Over a year ago, almost a year and a half ago at this point.
Yeah.
And so we get a to be concluded at this. So I thought it was only 5 issues, but I guess we'll be getting a 6th one next month. So excited. Great. Ta-Nehisi, if you want to come in and talk to us about this, I'll probably pass out. And then after that, we can talk about it. So, yeah, that's my review of Black Panther and the Crew, number 5. So, how about you, Nat? What do you got for us?
I have got another number 5 issue, Rose number 5 from Image Comics. This is written by Meredith Finch with pencils and inks by IG Guada. I hope I'm saying that correctly. It could be Ig, but IG seems easier for me to try to say. So,
yeah, come on and talk to us about it.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely draw us a picture. The art is incredible, so since we're talking about that, it is absolutely like, this is a high fantasy book. In this world, there's an evil queen, and she's sort of like taking over some of the smaller locations, and she's basically banned the use of magic. The Guardians are like an ancient group of warriors, and they had cats, K-H-A-T. So
naturally,
So they're like giant. And once again, I keep using Miyazaki, but like Miyazaki god-sized cats, you know? So they would be the guardian partners. And Rose, your lead character, has finally gotten a mental connection with her cat named Thorn.
Nice.
Rose and Thorn, because, you know.
Yeah. I get it.
But so in this issue, she's been captured, but the guard who captured her is actually being attacked by the other Queen's Guards. So really weird political thing happening where it seems as if the Queen really, if she can't control you, she's not going to keep you around. But the cat is underneath the control of these undead guards and can't help Rose survive this. It's a really cool, it's a heavy action-packed issue. But I have an overall problem with this story is it's just really been slow. Like, there's just not enough leading you anywhere. It's a lot of Rose running through the forest and not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. And we really, her introduction to the cat was on issue 4, and that seems like such an important connection to me.
Yeah.
So we're on issue 5, and she still hasn't, like, unlocked that power, really, with, like, what is it that her and the cat can do together.
And there's no, like, purpose for her running. Because, you know, like, a lot of times people are just running around the woods, and you're like, this is...
Yeah, she's the last guardian, so, like, she may be the protector of this realm who can stop the queen. But the queen is, like, marching on one of the main towns in the story with your secondary characters who are trying to fortify. Like, is the second plot is they're trying to fortify and protect this town, and the queen has also sent these, like, assassins out to get Rose and to kill her. And yeah, it's just, it's tropes that we've seen. It's done really, really well. It's just being done very, very slowly. So I will continue reading this book. I'm hoping there's a satisfying end, because I don't know how well it's doing in sales, and I'm afraid that we're not going to get, like, a satisfying end to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like this to be an ongoing. It is so beautiful. It's such a, like, a joy to look through. But again, it's just not enough is happening. We talked about in Let's Talk Comics last week, Headlopper, which is six issues of just straight action, so it's always things that are happening. Or not six issues, but four issues, like six pieces. And this is, you know, issue five, and I don't feel like anything's really happened.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it's a fun read.
Yeah.
Definitely not sad that I have it in my collection.
Rat Queens. Another issue five.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Weird. So,
wow, really? We all doing fives. So Curtis Webb. Weeby. Owen, Guinea, Ryan, Ferrer. I'm terrible at names, so please come on in and correct me. This one was actually, they've been doing three covers. So I love the main cover. They did a cosplay cover for their cover B. And then the August theme that Image is doing is the Hickman variants. So they did a cover C with Hickman drawing that one out. And that was also a very neat one. But diving into the issue, I haven't had an issue immediately throw me this way since Lock and Key Volume 4. And what happened was they change up the art style for a specific storyline telling. At the end of issue 4, they all went through this mirror thing, and you saw her, one of the characters meeting a past version of Betty. And what this dives into is all of the characters are in these different spots, and in the mirror side of it, it's a completely different art style than in the main reality. And so they deal with that going through until you get back to the main story arc and it switches back to the actual art style. And I really enjoy that when an artist separates story elements by art styles. I mean, this Rat Queens is definitely a novelty item for people like me. Like, I've played Dungeons and Dragons since 2000, like 17 years I've been playing this game, and it's, you know, it feeds into like an aesthetic. It's campy. It's definitely like an adventure cliche arc that they do, but I really enjoy how it gets laid down. The new storyline, I'm glad, doesn't have to, like the reboot, you don't have to have read the first three volumes to be able to jump into the new Rat Queens Volume 2 that Curtis is putting out. But yeah, I mean, if it's one of those things. If you're a fan of Rat Queens, you're going to enjoy this issue. If you're not, then you're not. But yeah, I will let Nat jump into that.
Yeah, the beginning art is very beautiful. For the other storyline, I was just looking at it a little bit.
And it's the same artist. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's actually what I was curious about.
Oh,
actually.
Is it?
Yeah,
it's Owen Gianni, and it looks like what he's. Oh, I say it's a he, but I don't actually know. It is definitely watercolors and lack of inks in the other worlds. So that this is, I mean, it's gorgeous. I like the main artist anyway. The ink lines are fantastic. This is, you know, it's clearly, it's got the feeling of hand-drawn. Why can people not draw bows?
That must be very, very fun for the artist to be able to do, is just, like, take on an entire part of the story and, like, a different art style to flex their own.
And it's really representative of how skilled the artist is.
Because, I mean, it's very, very different.
And it's watercolor. You can actually, this is one of the fun things about watercolor, is you can see the puck marks in the paper. So, because it's photo scanned, the texture's not there, but you can see it in the watercolored art.
Oh, yeah.
So, that's usually a telltale sign that you're looking at something that was done with watercolor, is that the paper is textured a certain way to grab the water and absorb it and not have it spread around.
Interesting.
So,
interesting.
This is gorgeous.
The full.
I don't know like who this character is.
I'm terrible with the character names besides Betty. It's the black sorceress, the one who uses the power of Negril. She's taps into the pseudo Cthulhu sort of mythos.
So like the elder god type thing.
Yeah, there's like this elder god sort of thing. It was a...
I want this as the background wallpaper on my computer.
Yeah, so it's a full page spread. So what the mirror is doing is it's taking them back to points that they regret and wish they could change. And that's the only spread of that character, is just this full page spread of her in darkness, like with this like tentacled thing sort of painted in with her.
This book is gorgeous. So, like, I can't say enough, like, how... I think when fantasy is done very well, you get so many elements of color in it. And yes, the art is cartoony, but there's this level of tactility. Like, things feel like they have weight. Like, you can reach out and touch them in this cartoon world. Like, it's very... That throne... is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It feels like it's made of stone. Those gems look as if they're actually there, that you can touch them. This is a beautiful piece of art.
For sure.
And like what I enjoy with this one is that they very much, this arc, they're playing a satire to the Dungeons and Dragons dungeon crawl. Like, this is the first time they've actually gone through a dungeon.
Oh, really?
And gone through traps and met like a main boss type villain and gone through that whole section. And at the end of it, they're like, we're never doing this again. We're adding dungeons and temples to our do not go to list. It's like right up there with cults and all this, like the stereotypical things that they do. So.
Looks awesome.
Yeah. So.
And prior to what I may have said at the beginning, actually, I'm not anti-Rat Queens at all. It's a book that's it's high on my radar, but I would like to kick back with the trades first and really get caught up. Which, I enjoyed issue one of this new run immensely, but I want to get the background.
And that is one thing that you do get to be, is like, to jump into this reboot, it's almost better for new readers to not have read it.
Oh, really?
Because the first volume of Rat Queens went 3 trades, 15 issues. Then they had a floating 16th issue, and then it was canceled.
Right.
And there's a gap of storyline that you don't have in between the end of the first run and the beginning of this, where you're like, well, wait, where did this guy come from?
Interesting.
And like, just a little background for people who may not know it, Rat Queens actually had 10 web comics that were produced in between
16 and the
reboot with the new issue one.
We might be looking at some sort of awesome hardcover event later in the future.
Actually, I didn't bother to look in this one, but I noticed the last couple issues. They did not do it with this one, but the last couple issues they had dropped like these little side adventures in the very back, and I had recognized those were from the webcomics that were put out. So, like, in issue 4, there was a volleyball montage with, like, the all-male counterpart to the Rat Queens.
Okay.
And that was straight out of the webcomics. It was, like, a three issue, quote-unquote.
Well, fingers crossed all of that gets collected with this first volume of
Coming out next month?
It's issue 5, you said, is that one?
Yeah, like...
So that should be the end of the first
one. Well, it's actually solicited in the back, so let me see... December. December is when we're getting Volume 4. High Fantasies is the title for the new arc.
Oh, that's awesome. They kept the actual... So it's trade paperback 4, so they're...
Yeah.
That's cool, so...
And,
no next, alienating of the old...
They're doing a special, like, one-shot issue next month with Orc Dave. So if it's something that you've... Fiona Staples guest-arted the cover for that.
Oh, nice.
So...
Who's the penciler of that issue?
I have no idea. Webb Dunbar and Bonvillain. So Bonvillain is, I'm assuming, the penciler on that one. But yeah, that right there is Fiona Staples. And she explained that she wanted to do an orc in a very soft and sensual environment. So if you haven't seen the cover for Orc Dave number 1, hey, you should Google that.
Nice. Yeah, it looks pretty silly and sensual.
Yeah. So it's the Orc Dave number 1 is the same back picture on all 3 covers of issue 5, so.
Cool. Well, I'll jump into my next review. I got Invincible Iron Man number 10. This is by Brian Michael Bendis and Stefano Caselli. Don't know if I'm pronouncing that one right. This is one I've been reading for a while now. It hasn't really sort of picked me. It's a nice little superhero romp that we're getting. I'm really digging Riri Williams as a character. So although it's Invincible Iron Man, for those of you who read Civil War II, Iron Man is Tony Stark is in a coma. And so we have his younger protege, Riri Williams, taking up the mantle. This one is just so silly in that I don't think I've seen a superhero comic actually deal with these sort of issues in the way it does. So she goes to Latveria in the previous issue and fights Lucia von Bardas, who is the current dictator of Latveria. And upon, you know, just in fight banter, Lucia is like, I'm the queen of this country, you can't do this to me, and Ironheart is beating her down, basically, and she's like, not anymore, I'm queen now, which in this issue we learn is that now that she has declared herself a sovereign ruler and has defeated the previous dictator of Latveria, Riri Williams is now currently the monarch of Latveria.
What?
So she declared her lineage basically and defeated the current queen and is the queen. So quite literally now she is the queen.
That is interesting, because the other Iron Man in the Marvel Universe is Dr. Doom.
Yeah, so Dr. Doom is out and flying around. I guess sort of spoilers, but she doesn't continue past this issue. It's just a one-off thing.
Oh, okay.
And, but it's just such an interesting thing, and we get this interesting two-page spread with her mom just in the bath. And then, like, these S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and Daisy Johnson, a.k.a. Quake, come up. And they're like, ma'am, do you understand that your daughter is now the monarch of a country? And she's like, what the fuck? What? I was just in the bath. And then we get this great, bit from Daisy. She's just reading off this memo. She says, ma'am, as her only living relative, do you consider yourself a member of Miss Williams' royal family? And is your intention for this property to be appropriated as an embassy to Latveria? And then her mom just pauses and is like, I think I need a lawyer. And then, so you get some cool stuff. Riri would make a pretty good queen, apparently. She has a list of demands when S.H.I.E.L.D. comes for the country.
That's awesome.
And number one is schools. So she makes schools. I know. Aw, what an awe moment. Anyway, it's great. I've been reading it, like I said, since number one, but this is the first one I've felt the need to actually bring onto the show.
Cool.
So, yep, that's my review.
All right, well, for my last review of the day, I've got Mr. Miracle, number one. I mispronounce things on purpose all the time.
Yes.
It's Mr. Miracle, number one. This is a Jack Kirby classic character. This is being done by Tom King and Mitch Gerads, or Mitch Gerads. I'm not quite positive of how to pronounce his name. But pencils, inks, and colors, all by the same artist. Tom King has some problems. that dude, I don't know what he's taking or, like, what his background is. Between this, Batman, and The Vision, dude's got some issues. Like, I don't even... This is a fantastic debut. Let's get that out of the way. This is so heady and fucked up. There's not a lot. I don't know how to talk about this book. There's clearly Scott Free, Mr. Miracle, is having some sort of mental breakdown with his decision making and attempts. So Mr. Miracle's main power is that he can escape anything. Like, he's the world's, universe's greatest escape artist. So he devises the greatest trap that he can think of, like, to escape from. So I'm going to spoil this pretty heavy, because the rest of the series was going to be dealing with the psychological ramifications of this escape, and that's death. Hmm. So he kills himself. Yeah, so he escapes death. And, yeah, so there's a lot of, like, psychological craziness to this book. Go out and check this out if you can find it. It's pretty pretty scarce now. But I will definitely be on this series. This is a fantastic debut. Fantastic.
Excellent. All right, well, I guess that'll wrap it up for this issue. All right, say bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, everyone. Bye.
Yeah. Sorry about that.